Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. If you are a first or second time home buyer, this is your time. Call 1-800-638-7781. There may be a house for you here in this city. 1-800-638-7781, the Maryland Mortgage Program. We are going to jump into some city issues this hour. We talk with two of our city council representatives this hour. In the studio with me, Mary Pat Clark, who represents the 14th District in the Baltimore City Council. Always good to have you here, Mary Pat. Get her mic up, please.
Okay.
And there you go. You're on. You're very good. And Carl Stokes is with us, representing the 12th District here in the city.
Glad to be here. Hi, Mike.
Mike.
How many years have you known me?
All right.
We've only known each other, I don't want to say how many years.
A long time.
Let's say half a century at
half
least.
Half a century close.
Right.
Mark, Carl.
410-319-8888.
Thank you, Sue. I appreciate it.
So let me ask you two a very serious question. Okay. Let's start off with 410-319-8888. We want to hear from you all out there. Because there's so many issues here to go through with this city. We are now, you know, as we said to me the other day on the phone, Carl, when we talked about coming on the show.
Yes.
You said, you know, as the state legislature winds down, the city council picks up its business because you have to deal with the budget coming in.
That's right.
It becomes, and we'll know how much money the city does or doesn't get from state once the session is over in April, mm-hmm. and how bad it will be. But even without knowing that, we are facing a $65 million deficit. Is that about right in the city? Is it more or less?
I think a bit less. We actually just left a budget hearing. But
yeah, tell me about what happened.
We had to leave before it really got into the nuts and bolts, quite frankly. So I'm not sure. So I can't answer that. There were some revenues that were doing better. We were doing better with income taxes, hotel taxes, energy taxes, revenue. And so I think it may be slightly less than the $65 million, but I can't answer how much. But we do have some making up to do.
Do you want to jump in on that at all?
I wasn't at the budget hearing, but I think that my colleague is absolutely correct that that $65 million number is diminishing because the times are picking up.
Yeah.
We are not in recovery, but we are moving to that moment. And
yes.
So we're starting to see a little rise in our revenues. And right. Always the original number that's mentioned is negotiated down by hiring freezes and the like.
Well, let me ask you both this question. You didn't make this address because either one of you are mayor. The both of you at one time thought about being mayor of the city. But so
we both ran
for mayor of the
like
city.
All of my constituents think about their being mayor.
Right.
And so, I think a lot of them would do a good job.
A lot of them would do.
So they would.
Let me ask you both.
Okay.
I'd like to hear your statement, if you would, on what you think the state of the city is. What is the, we heard the mayor say it. What do you think the state of our city is?
Well, I think we're at a real sort of a crux here in terms of we have to make some hard and sharp decisions. I think we're past the time, the years, when we can sort of just wait it out. I think that the economy, though it's getting better, it's going to remain. And I'm not an economist, but I think from what I read, will continue to remain pretty much flat for another couple, several years. And but expenses continue to go up. They're not flattening, and revenues are somewhat. And I think we just really have to make some tough decisions. Otherwise, we're going to find ourselves in a hole that's going to be too deep. But I think we're not beyond a point where we can make some changes to help ourselves. I guess what I'm trying to say is we have to pare down and gear up for the time when the economy will break. And I don't think it'll be – I think it'll be more sudden than a slow rise. I think at some point it will break, and we have to be prepared to take advantage of that break. If we're not, I think other jurisdictions will pass us or surpass us.
I tend to agree with my colleague more than usual, actually.
Oh, boy.
That's just a joke. We usually see eye to eye. I think that we are at the still point in a turning world in which we have survived. Mm-hmm. Like just like when something traumatic happens to you physically, and you realize that you're alive, and then we're there. We and good for us, and good for the spirit of people in Baltimore, and good for the fact that we're not running a deficit,
right,
that we have survived. Now we have to thrive, and I agree that we have to start now. And one of the things I would like us to do right now, it seems counterintuitive.
Right.
I would like us to focus on the people who live in this city and make sure that if they're employed, they're earning a living wage. And that especially if they're employed somehow, some way, in some kind of industry that we have contributed to and they have contributed to with their tax dollars as citizens of Baltimore City. For example, I know this is endless, but it will be resolved that basically if they're working in the hospitality trade and we're promoting it now in as best we can, you know what? It's time to start paying a living wage because we've contributed so much into it. Make sure that it becomes the, you know, what happens in Baltimore City. And I know that's counterintuitive because you say, well, we're in the middle of a recession. We can't. No, do it now so that we can help to bring that recovery from the grassroots up into Baltimore. And I think it's important to do dramatic things like that now to shore up for the recovery and the identity of who we are.
Right.
A city that takes care of its own people and residents. And I think we can do that.
Right. And I do agree with Mary Pat. Where we would probably diverge is, I think, also counterintuitively, that we ought to start looking at dramatically reducing the tax burden on the citizens and other people who could possibly come into the city and invest. I think now's the best time, actually, to cut, frankly, because it's easier to cut
what?
To cut taxes, to cut some bloated non-efficiencies that people don't want to talk about. I don't think that let's start.
What are you talking about, non-efficiencies?
The services that we have. I think we ought to take care of our priorities, which are education first, police, public safety, and take care of our housing stock and reinventing the city. But I think that unlike some other cities that we have decided to keep the full load of workers that we have in our city. And I'm not saying that we should start laying off people, but I am saying this, that in a city that has, for example, more police per capita than any other city other than two other cities in America, while still having more murders than any other city in America, save two, that maybe we're not as efficient as we should be with personnel or strategies. And I think we should start auditing. We don't do audits in the city of Baltimore. On departments, on agencies, performance, or financial. I don't think we really know where our dollars are in this town. I also believe that we should sharply look at a 5-10-year plan of cutting property taxes. I think we have to change behavior in the city.
I think
go ahead, Mary Pat.
I think we should invest right now.
Okay.
I think we should invest, just like we're. I would ask the private sector to invest in hospitality, for example, and pay a living wage. Retailers pay a living wage. This is where so many of our residents work. But invest in, for example, our schools. The facilities themselves, and I know you're a supporter of this,
100%.
Councilman Stokes, 100%.
Right.
And that's going to take a lot of money. It's going to take $2 billion.
Right.
Why? What's going to take $2 billion?
To
fix
to
all
catch
of the schools.
Up with all the deferred maintenance we have deferred on our public school facilities.
Okay, let me ask you this, and to get into red tax. Folks, I want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Some of the calls coming in. We're going to get to you in just a minute. But I'm going to throw some things out, some things that both of our city council members have just raised here. Let's talk what you just said about the schools.
Yes.
All right?
It's on the table right
so it's
now.
On the table. So this is a question I have for the two of you that maybe you can answer for our listeners and answer for me as well. We had a show here months back about, even before Alonzo uttered a word, about construction in our city schools.
Okay.
And we learned about a new kind of bond that other cities have done.
Greenville,
like,
South Carolina.
Like, right, exactly.
Right.
Where we could take this $60 million a year
right.
that we put in school construction and leverage that to get a $1.2 billion bond that we could use to immediately a $1.2 billion to come to Baltimore
right.
immediately
right.
to rebuild our schools. And we could pay that back with the $60 million we're already committed.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Over the next 25 years, I think.
Well,
so, or whatever that number is.
Right. Okay.
Number.
Yeah.
So the question is, what's the problem? Why is the mayor opposed to it? I'm going to get curious.
I don't think she is.
Well, she is. She said she doesn't want it.
She said
she wants to invest $300 million in the city schools doing construction, and that she doesn't want to add more debt to the city by taking out this bond. But if you know how you're going to pay for it, and if we could imagine what $1.2 billion could do,
right.
putting people to work, training people who don't have jobs but through our unions, rebuilding our schools, what the kids would think, what the students would think, what the families would think about what our commitment is, what is the problem?
Well,
go ahead, Mary Pat.
Let me talk about what's happening at the state level.
Right.
No, not the state level.
No. I want you to just focus on the why we are not taking the bond, I want to know. Not the state level, why we're not taking the bond we could get without anybody's help but our own. What's the problem?
I'm sorry. You go ahead.
Okay, so I believe in taking the bond, but there is a state piece of it, Mike.
It all goes together.
Wait, let me say that. I apologize, Mary Pat. What were you about to say? What do you mean?
No, I'm saying that the money that adds up to the leveraging mm-hmm. comes from the state and the city, both. And right now,
through a new nonprofit that has to be created.
Yes, correct. Well, but
most of the money is state money.
But go ahead, every Mary. Year, yes, it's. Let's look with the General Assembly's there. Every year, lately, we have an average of construction money coming from the state of Maryland of about $32 million. Okay? Now, that comes in forms of a school. You're going to build this school. We'll approve this school. This is what it's going to look like. Here's the money we match. We add our money to it. Okay. What the bill in the – what the block grant bill in the General Assembly right now is the city saying to the state, give us that money every year, that average $32 million, and let us add that to our own money to leverage the money that you – the lending power you're talking about. So we are actually in the – we're in the middle of that and hoping that the state General Assembly will approve that so that we can do the leveraging, and we will also use, to the best of my knowledge and support and interest, local capital money as well. But we have to – the state pays most of school construction funds in the state, not just in Baltimore,
gotcha.
But everywhere.
But my understanding is that the city hall is not pushing this in Annapolis.
There's a different. Well, okay. So they're pushing part of it, Mike. Mark.
I'll change my name for you. Anything, Carl.
But that's going on. But so here's exactly what Murray Pat. So the mayor is saying we can only do $300 million. ACLU wants $2.8 billion,
yeah.
and the CEO says $1 billion, $2 billion. And I agree, and I think the council agrees with $1 billion, $2 billion. Now, to get there, I'm suggesting, as Mary Pat, as everyone else, that we leverage the state money with our own city money, and as you said, Mike, Mark, we get the full. I don't know what's wrong with my brain today. That we get the full
spring fever.
I don't know. Spring fever, that we get the full, we leverage for the $1.2 billion bond that would allow us that amount of money to come in quickly, and we rebuild the schools. So, Mary Pat's to the point is that we have to have a guarantee from the state to go to the bonding market that they're going to send us $32 million every year for 10, 15, 20 years. That has to happen on their level. Also, they have to change the way the formula is done, because now when you get your $32 million, they've already designated it
the
goes
school.
To fixing Digital Harbor or
right.
Francis Scott Key. We don't want a designation of which school it goes to. Send us the money in a bulk grant. We'll decide which school gets what when. And so So we're supportive of the full leverage.
So on the way to the phones, let me ask you this question. How do both of you stand on the bottle tax?
Okay. So me first?
Yeah, go
I'm
ahead.
I'm ready. So principally, I'm against taking any quote-unquote taxes to fund schools and children. I think they get their money off the top, just like state law says they should. I think we should not be putting children through a campaign to raise money for schools. I believe that school and children money come off the top of your budget, and then you have a fundraiser for a new fire truck if you want to, or you tax someone else for your whatever, your garden club, but you don't do it to children. So on principle, it's not the bottle tax that I oppose. It's the method of saying that they can't, our children can't have what they deserve unless we tax or do something else, and a regressive tax at that.
Mary Pat.
I support the mayor's proposal to raise this bottle tax and dedicate it to the capital, dedicate it to the capital needs of this $2.8 billion of windows you can't see through, furnaces that only work in the summer, air conditioners that only work in the winter, kids that don't have labs to learn science in, etc., all over this city. So basically, Baltimore City does contribute, and we have never shirked what they call our maintenance of effort, which goes into the operational budget of the school system. Other counties are saying, oh, we can't afford
it. Among the wealthiest, Montgomery County.
We've always done it. We continue to do it in the worst of budget times. This is about capital money, which is part of the leveraging formula. It's a small part, but it's a part. And it shows our willingness to bite a bullet, which because it surely is, if it is dedicated to the fixing of the facilities. Look, this isn't going to go on forever, Mark. This isn't. There is an end to this issue of the fixing up and catching up our schools. I just want to say that. It's not the rest of our lives.
Well, in government, it always goes on. But that's just my opinion. It always goes on. Once you start taxing people, the tax hardly ever comes down. But that's just my opinion. Let me say this about Baltimore City and the rest of the jurisdictions, please. That is this. Baltimore City does not give its fair share to children and to schools. While the rest of the state, every other jurisdiction, is giving 40 to 55% of their operating budget off the top to schools, Baltimore City gives around 11% of its budget to schools. It's not just the dollars, it's the percentage that is 11% versus everybody else's 40 to 55.
I'm going to go to the phones here before we go to break because our caller's in here. But my question is,
well, how do you cut taxes when you're saying something like that?
Well, I have those two questions. A, how do you cut taxes and do what you're suggesting, Carl?
It's easy.
And well, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
And B, the question would be, the only way we're going to do it is if we decide to cut police. If you cut
if there's anything left in recreation and parks.
So we'll come back
and
to
the fire department.
But let me open the phones here. 410-319-8888. We'll come back to these two really critical questions, I think. Eric in Northeast, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you, Mark. And
thank you
for framing the topic and the discussion this afternoon. I think that it's very important that you open that out. First of all, I think the state of the city is that the city has a cold. Regarding the priorities for the city, I would say that they should be first neighborhoods, education, and then public safety. One thing I'd like to do is lift up Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark, that has a wonderful weekend happenings, which I'm on her email list. And no other council person or no other delegate in the city has that type of transparency and awareness. And I'd like to thank her for it. Councilman Stokes,
hi.
I think your service on the budget and finance is critical, and I support you.
Thank you.
Mark, thank you very much for framing the discussion, and I agree with Councilman Stokes that the maintenance of effort that the city contributes is just a minimum. They meet the minimum, but they can do better.
So let's get another couple calls.
I agree that we could and we should, but you not while we're cutting the property taxes, so, slashing.
Hold on. We're going to come to that. We're going to jump into this issue in a big way. Let me just get some other callers and get their thoughts in, then we'll jump right into that, okay? 410-319-8888.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Eric. Andrea, you're on the air.
Hi, I just had a question, and I'm not calling to be a stalker, but I'm sitting here, and I'm not going anywhere, and I just had to ask this question because I wanted to know it for the past few months that I've lived here.
Okay, go ahead.
As far as the city, and it's not so much as far as increasing or cutting taxes, but as far as all these abandoned homes, a lot of places in the country and other parts, because I lived everywhere, they charge these homeowners hefty fines for leave. I mean, you just don't see.
I totally support that.
So how? So I'm wondering, is that in motion, or what do you need to do to get that in motion?
Andrea, this is a great question you've asked, and let me tack on to your question. During the last mayoral election, the one candidate who raised the issue over and over again was Jody Landers, and what he suggested was that you do like some other cities do, have this tiered taxing system. People who do not take care of the properties, abandon them, should be charged way too more.
If they can't pay it,
take the houses from them and do something with them.
Right. Jack Young suggested that last year. The mayor opposed
it. Pull that mic up a little closer to you.
I'm saying Jack Young proposed that last year. The mayor opposed it.
Well, I'm not sure we have all the authority that we need to do that. We need to go to the General Assembly for that. But I think
we have to go to the General Assembly to change our property tax structure?
Yes, because the state law says all the rates have to be the same within a jurisdiction.
And so in order to find an exception to that, we would have to go to the General Assembly, which is not unheard of. There are people.
Right. But without the mayor's support, that's not going to go to the General Assembly.
It's tougher.
It is what the suggestion is the tax, not a fine, a tax on vacant properties is tiered to be far higher rate than just on other properties in the city, to the extent that it's no longer profitable for somebody to sit on a property and let it rot waiting for I don't know what.
Well, why can't we find them? Can't you find them?
We can find them, yes.
Yeah.
If you don't pay the fines, take it out. Take the house.
Well, and then they go into tax sale, and then they don't retrieve their houses, and then nobody retrieves them,
so they sit there vacant.
But wait a minute.
Have a question.
Really?
If somebody pushed the idea of tiering the property taxes so that you can tax folks who don't take their properties more than others, abandoned places around.
Right.
City might have to tax itself, since they have a lot of abandoned houses they're not doing anything with as well. But if we can take houses from people who don't pay their water bills, but we can't take houses from people who are leaving their house abandoned and deteriorating, and destroying our communities.
And
what's wrong with that? What's wrong is that
we already own a bunch of vacant houses. What's wrong is, a lot of these vacants are in the name of a private owner, but that private owner is long gone, hasn't paid his taxes, went to tax sale, nobody bought it, and so it's sitting there in limbo, and the city doesn't want to take title because the city doesn't want to own another vacant.
Right. O'Malley started taking a lot of houses.
I forget
what it was called, Project 5000 or something.
Yes.
The problem is, Mark, is that so the city starts taking homes, and what are they going to do with them? They can't renovate them. Nobody wants them because the property tax is so high. So the city takes 50,000 vacant properties. Then what? Yeah, we can find people and take their homes, but then we don't have a plan to do
what's
next.
Well, we do have a plan, but it's not being implemented. And the plan was proposed by Build. It's been successful in Philadelphia, and I can't get it done in Chum that wants it, but my Chum neighborhood. But basically, it says, okay, when you have at least one block face of vacants,
right,
then what you do is you acquire the vacant houses, you demolish the vacant houses, you create a development site, and then you offer it like as cleared land for a developer to bid or to developers to bid to come in and build, for example, what we want, affordable home ownership.
Right.
Okay. That's a plan. when we built the Hilton Hotel, they created an affordable housing fund so that neighborhoods could benefit while the hotel was being built from this plan. The problem is, I can tell you that in the one neighborhood that I have one of these Hilton Hotels plans, it's been years and years because the acquisition process and relocation cost so much, and they won't spend the money to do what needs to be done there to clear three blocks so we can offer it to a developer across the street from Clifton Park, down the street from Lake Montebello.
Yeah, it's a great neighborhood. So the city won't spend the money? Is that what we're saying?
Well, the city says it doesn't have the money, but...
But you're saying we do have the money.
It's slow going. It's been years since we were promised this.
Right.
And people are... We have relocated people and all and demolished 11 houses.
Well, let me take a quick break here and come
but
right back.
But it is a plan.
But...
It's not working.
Apparently not funded.
It's not adequately funded.
But it feels like you're both saying there's nothing we can do.
No.
That there's a lot we
has
can do.
Worked in Philadelphia. That can be done here. That clearing sites, take over, take the titles, clear the site. You got to relocate people. That costs money, but that is one plan that is valid, and there are others. Homesteading. I know dollar programs. Everybody says, "Oh, do it." But just because a majority of people think something makes sense doesn't mean it's wrong. I mean, basically,
We have to take a quick break and come right back.
Go Dollar House.
With Mary Pat Clark and Carl Stokes, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts. Stacy, Connie, Hank, we'll come to your call as soon as we return. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. I'll remind you before we join our conversation that support for WEAA is made possible by The Book Thing, 3001 Vineyard Lane in Baltimore. The Book Thing accepts donated books and dispenses them at no charge. The Book Thing has over 200,000 books in stock and gives away almost 20,000 books each week. Open Saturday and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. More information at bookthing.org. Or call 410-662-5631.
We are so proud. And in the wintertime, The Book Thing accepts donated coats, hats, mittens, and people can bring them there, and they get to kids.
Let me go back to the phones here. We're going to come back to this.
Okay, great.
410-319-8888. Connie, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Connie.
Hi, Connie.
Hi.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
We're great.
Welcome.
I am actually calling to comment on what you guys were speaking on, the houses, the abandoned houses. I was wondering, how would people who are inquiring about those houses that the city have already purchased, because honestly, I never knew about that. Actually, it was a surprise to me to hear that, you know, the city had already started to buy up some of these vacant houses.
Oh, yeah.
And not knowing what to do with them. I actually have a lot of things that I have in store, I mean, to do with the property. I think that it will be really cool to, you know, to buy them, like you said, demolish them. I know people who do a lot of home improvement work and, you know, use it as like a home for, like, for women or for children or homeless people.
Right.
You know, like, there's a lot of nonprofit ideas that I actually have in mind, because I knew years ago, I want to say Shayla Dixon or somebody did houses for a dollar, vacant houses for a dollar or something.
That was Schaefer. But yeah,
William Donald Schaefer and Bob Embry, yeah.
Along in the early 70s.
Years ago, I didn't know that the city still owned some of those things. So I would love to know more about that. How can I get that information?
Well, if you go to the city's website, the housing department, they have a website, and you go to vacants to value, and there's a list of city-owned properties that are available for purchase, and that's a good place to start.
But one of the things, and what Connie was saying, I mean, one of the things, because those houses really aren't there for people to do the dollar houses, do things inexpensively and more like that.
No.
We talked on during
they
the break.
They had 3% federal loan money.
Right. So we don't have that anymore.
We don't have that. It doesn't exist.
But what we talked about this idea, and I just want to throw out to you, then we're going to go right to Stacey, our next caller up. What about the city being the banker? Is that out of the question? Can the city do that?
I think we should take a look at it. I mean, we are getting into this leveraging notion, and I think it's a good one in terms of fixing our schools. Perhaps we could leverage enough so that we could get some, maybe even do some guaranteeing if the charter so permits, so that we could get some low or no interest loans going. I think the dollar house idea lives in the hearts of people who live here.
Sure, it worked back 40 years ago.
It did, yes. And they had a couple things that people need, which was low interest loans, and they had help with their design. You had to live there for 5 years as an owner-occupant. You know, but there were people to help them from the housing department, and there was the loan money. And, by the way, if you didn't finish your house, then you got paid for it, but you didn't get it. You know, you didn't get title to it until you at least brought it up to code.
Right. Well, I just think we can do it, but we have to talk about this. I mean, we're talking a little early on the show about the city, you know, leveraging $1.2 billion. I mean,
I'm talking 2.8, actually.
Okay, 2.8.
Well, in my district.
Nope. Just in your district alone.
Well, come on, Carl. Okay. What were you going to say?
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, I don't want to put too many ideas on the table. Leveraging. There's a point where the city cannot.
Right.
We have a bond rating to protect also, which allows us to borrow at lesser rate than, you know, some other places with lower bond rating. So we just have to figure that all out. I don't know if I'm smart enough to count all these numbers in my head.
Here.
So,
well, I'm not. I want to say this, though. We're not talking about the city bond rating when we're talking about the if we go to a nonprofit that to be the bond to leverage funding for loans for school fix-ups. But we're taking it a step away from the city bond rating.
And are you saying that they're not going to expect the city's faith and credit to back up a $2.8 billion bond?
They'll expect the faith and credit of the city's, to the extent the city is part of the instrument that does the, like the stadium authority.
I'm with you.
Okay. Same relationship.
So you can't leverage everything, but there needs to be a point where you can say we can number X billions of dollars leverage to do housing and or schools to generate something in the city.
That's right.
To figure out that.
We're with you.
So let me open the phones again. Then we'll come back to the property tax. 410-319-8888. Stacey, you're on the air.
Hi, how's everybody doing?
Hi.
Very well. Thank you, Stacey, for joining us.
Good. I almost don't like calling because every time I call, when I'm on the phone waiting to ask my question, I have 50 million questions. You guys go down another street that makes me really evaluate whether I want to ask the question that I had initially. But I'm going to ask two, and they're totally unrelated. But
go ahead. That's fine.
To address both, I'd love it. The first one is about, I want to know what's the progress on the moratorium on having people lose their homes for the water bills.
Good question.
I know that somebody had taken that up in the city council. Okay. I also want, this isn't the second question, nobody has addressed the issue of only 70 million homes were audited. I'm wondering if there's a plan to audit 70,000. Thank you so much. I'm wondering if there's a plan to audit each and every home that falls underneath of the Water Department of Works jurisdiction, if there was so much rampant misbilling in that small sample, I would think that the whole jurisdiction should be audited. But that's my first question. Second question is, I hear you saying there is an endpoint, Mary Pat, and I do love you both. But I'm wondering, in these schools, why is it 2012 and the kids still can't drink out of the water fountain? When is somebody going to do something about the lead water in the schools?
That's part of the whole routine that we're talking about, and you're right. I mean, when I say there's an endpoint, here's what I mean, Stacey, and I mean that this $2.8 billion is a catch-up money. It is to bring our whole school system buildings up to standards where they are healthy, they are bright, they are stable, they have the accoutrements you need, like to study science and all. So there is a moment where we will actually catch up. It doesn't mean that every day we don't need to go out and fix something or build a new school, etc. But we won't have the whole system on our hands, and that's what the $2.8 billion is for. So I didn't mean to misstate it.
Well, that's cool.
The water bill.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Murray Pat and Carl and Jack Young was the lead sponsor on declaring that we support a moratorium on anyone losing their house purely because of an unpaid water bill, when obviously so many of the water bills are misstated or estimated.
Inaccurate.
And so there will be a hearing at 5 o'clock next Wednesday at City Hall in City Council Chambers. And if you have a certain cable service in Baltimore City, you can watch it on Channel 25. But there will be a hearing next Wednesday, 5 o'clock in City Hall.
So that's the 21st?
It is.
It's my daughter's birthday, Aaron.
Okay. So I don't remember. But it is. And so let me also mention that if we're going to, by the way, construct our schools and reconstruct our schools, that the first hires ought to be Baltimore City residents and Baltimore City construction companies. There are a lot of people unemployed and underemployed, and there are a lot of people with skills, not just people untrained, who could repair and build and construct. And a lot of companies, both minority, women, and a majority, that deserve these jobs.
I would think that you could bring the unions into it, so that people who do not have jobs in Baltimore City can get into apprenticeship programs that can help rebuild the schools, get trades, get jobs, and create families and stability.
I think that has to be a part of any bill that's eventually written, frankly, because I am seeing too much of city dollars, TIFs, pilots, whatever,
going out of the city
and going out to people from wherever.
So, but let me ask a quick question on the moratorium, then I have to come back to the property. Right now this has no teeth.
It's a resolution.
A resolution, right? It has no teeth. So how do you give it teeth? Can you pass a law that says there's going to be a moratorium on foreclosing on people's homes, taking people's homes
because of
water bills?
Water bills.
Can you pass that law?
We can try.
We can try. Yeah, we have the ability.
And if the mayor doesn't sign it, then what happens to the bill?
President Jack Young, this is his issue originally, because he has tried for years to get water bills off of tax sales. And he has worked hard. And whether we can get it done or not, I don't know. But
Why couldn't you get it done?
If it doesn't get signed, if it gets vetoed, not the resolution.
If you pass a law in City Council saying you can't do this for X number of times,
I would definitely pass a law.
So if you could pass a law in City Council and the mayor vetoed it, can you override the veto?
I'm not sure, but we can override it.
And we have three quarters of the votes.
Why wouldn't you then, since you seem to have the votes in the City Council, right?
Well,
we could try.
I don't know if we have the votes.
We had votes for moratorium, but not a real law.
Well, we
have a vote for the resolution.
That does make a difference among politicians, Mark. Yes.
So they can spew, we don't want to close down and take people's homes, but if you make the law, I don't want to vote for it.
Wait a minute. I have a law.
That what we're saying?
Hear me out.
I think you two would vote for it, but we're saying
I have a law that got passed last summer, and it says that it is illegal, it is against the law, to send a water bill if that meter has not been read at that point. Now, I'm going to maintain that anyone, I mean, now that's a law. We passed it.
I understand that.
And if people start getting sent to tax sale for just water bills, and if those water bills were estimated, I'm going to sue.
Right. Yeah, it is. The water department apparently has been breaking the law for the last several months.
They have reduced the number of estimates, cut them about in half.
But bills are
going out.
We have 15 minutes left. We have a lot of callers. I want to get to the phone. So very quickly, and Donna, you can't answer this take 10 minutes to answer it.
Yes,
but I want to get into this so our listeners can hear it. And then get to Donald and Dolores, our next two callers. I want to get them in here. So how, Carl Stokes, are you going to pay for all the things you want to pay for? I'm talking about cutting the property tax. As much as I respect you Right. And we've had this argument before. I don't see how you do it. I mean, okay. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, it takes more than 30 seconds, Mike.
You got more than 30 seconds.
It does.
Mike,
I don't know what the hell that is. But anyway,
Patrick's Day coming. Next Saturday, and
we have Irish in it, but he hasn't been drinking, so I don't know what this is.
I definitely haven't been drinking. All right, so you're riding up Falls Road. You come to Cold Spring Lane. There's a gas station on either corner. One is $4, one is $4. Does it matter? No, you go to one on whichever side you're riding. You're riding up Cold Spring Lane. Gas station on the right is $4. The one on the left is $3.90. Does it matter? Yeah, I turn my car around. I go to the guy at $3.90. The guy at $3.90, you know what? Not only does he get me, he gets a whole bunch of other people. His volume goes up. He actually starts making more money than the guy at $4.
So you're assuming he's going to buy. You're making the assumption that people are going to be flying into Baltimore to buy houses.
Or invest. Now, let me tell you, look, we already tell people our tax is too high. How do we tell them that? Because when they go down to BDC and say, I want to build a hotel, or I want to build a new office building, or I want to break ground over here, BDC says, we got a tax break for you. We're going to give you a tax break. We're going to encourage you to come here because our taxes are too high. Here's some money from our residents who are paying twice as much as you're going to pay to build your new hotel. That's how I know that something is terribly broken, and because we omit by telling other people, you can't build this hotel unless we give you a tax break, whether they ask for one or not.
So, okay, this is what I would ask. I want to set a date for this debate to take place on the air.
Oh, good.
What debate is that?
This one. Well, property taxes.
Lower property taxes.
Is that what we need to do? And gather a small group for 1 hour or more to talk with our listeners about this particular issue.
Great.
Rather than try to shoehorn it in in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay? I'm not convinced. I want to be convinced.
I understand,
I'm
Mark.
Not convinced
I got
either. I'm not convinced either that it makes, and I totally agree with my colleague about the one percenters getting the cuts. It's just like Republican economics, you know?
Right.
But Democrats are playing the game.
Well, most Democrats in the city council want to cut taxes, okay?
Right, we all do.
All right, they're not playing the game, but I think we should discuss this.
So we're going to come back to this. We are going to come back in a very serious way.
Right,
yeah.
Right, we are serious.
In the next 2 weeks, we'll set a date.
Okay.
410-319-8888. Donald, you're on the air.
Good evening. How are you?
Hey, Donald.
Hey, Cole. Hey, Mary. How are you?
Good.
We're fine, man.
Now, in less than a minute, I'm going to show you how to get some school money and some property tax money.
Go ahead.
All right.
Go.
Take 2 minutes.
Now, what the situation is now the money is available, but the city is not going after the money. The city has to sue those same banks that Obama just bailed out because they used MERS, the Mortgage Electronic Registry System. The banks created that to circumvent the land recording system. Every time you make a purchase of a home, it's supposed to be filed with the clerk of the court.
Right.
And going to land records. That way you can have a trail, a history of the purchase and the sale of that particular property. Initially, when you purchase a home, your paperwork goes down there. If I just purchase my home, myself and the land records is the only ones who have the original note as far as the original, who originally financed it. Now, there's filing fees involved in this. The city have lost tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in filing fees because of the banks circumvented and violated the law by using MERS.
This is Councilwoman Ricky Spector's issue.
Yes, ma'am.
She says this?
She talks about this. Right. She's right, and you're right.
Yes,
You are so right.
Well, who would do the prosecution?
They're in Annapolis now. Isn't that a bill already in Annapolis, the liquidation fees? That's being debated.
Donald, you're saying make them mandatory with penalties, right?
But I think the only person who can sue them is the AG.
Yeah, are you saying going backwards, Donald? Because I think that bill is in Annapolis right now.
Right.
You there?
Donald.
What happened to Donald?
My gosh.
But anyway, I think the state.
He's right.
But the state, it has to be the AG's office that does
and
this.
And it has to be state legislation.
Yes, the city can't do it on its own.
We can't do it in its jurisdiction.
So
legally.
This is what Councilwoman Spector talks about.
Right.
And she is correct, and Donald is correct.
Right.
So, Donald, do you have one more quick thought? We have another caller on the line we have to get to.
I'll be real quick with this. which, you know, I was an on-air radio personality, and those issues of water bills, it goes back a long period of time because it's recently folks are talking about the water bills, guesstimated water bills.
Right,
but
right.
Also, our property values, our property taxes are also being estimated also. I think the last time Carl had the city council with the council hearing with the
tax and assessments. Assessment
correct.
Tax
Ron, Ronald, I believe,
Young.
Robert Young and them.
Right.
They have just as many people assessing our property as the city has reading our water meter. So you could go from both one side of your street to the next, and everybody has a different value. So the value should reflect the current assessments of the property. If I pay $250,000 for my home and my property is assessed at $175,000, my taxes should reflect that, not the $250,000 assessment.
Absolutely.
Right.
You want to say something to that, Carl?
Y'all have a good evening.
Thank you, Donald.
Thank
You're welcome.
No, he's right, and we're hoping that we get this straightened out, and I think we've put some pressure. And frankly, I got to say that the local newspaper has put some pressure on assessment
yes.
and taxation
to
get this straight. So I think they're working hard not to be embarrassed again.
So let me get a call, 403-198-8888. Dolores, you're on the air.
I'm trying to understand why the mayor quietly decided to do the Grand Prix again when we lost money the first time. And we're already howling about the city doesn't have enough money to pay for services for the citizens, and we need to have all these taxes. I completely do not understand that. And why wasn't that presented to the citizens of Baltimore at election time?
It doesn't even go to the city council.
Right, it doesn't. We're going to subsidize it again to the tune of close to $800,000.
Is that a good idea?
So we can lose money again?
We're going to subsidize it again. That's the bottom line. So it wasn't before us. It's not before the city council. It's a mayoral decision. It does not come to the city council.
And the city council has no power at all to deal with this?
No. All we could do is pass a law so that they couldn't cut down any more trees.
I mean, but it seems, you know, I keep thinking about this Grand Prix, and as someone said to me, why doesn't Baltimore build on its strengths rather than trying to import something that isn't here?
Right.
I mean, I had to get my car fixed a few weeks ago. It cost me almost close to $300.
Wow.
And it was because my car hit a pothole in the
right
city.
Here.
Right?
We got
yes.
it.
Right?
Yep.
So if we use that $7 million to fix the potholes in the city and people's neighborhoods, that might go a long way to making people smile in town.
I'm with you. We did a lot of things wrong, I believe, but it's not my issue to go over. I got to focus on a few things. But the whole Grand Prix, I mean, here's what we did. It's like a guy say, I want to open a corner grocery store. So we build him the store. We stock the store. And then we say, here, go at the register and just start ringing up sales. I mean, that's what we did. We built the whole track for him. We basically gave him money with police and fire and cleanup. And we gave him that money.
So if we don't find a sponsor, they're going to have to pull the plug?
I don't know.
I have no idea. I mean, I'm a watcher of this.
You both sound very frustrated by
the
this.
Sidelines.
Well, we are. We think the money could be directed in other places. I actually think
you can't rant and rave about something you have absolutely no control over.
Right.
You can just hope for the best and go on and do what you can do. At least that's what my mother said. We're talking about me.
Right. But we need to redirect, our resource. This is the issue of a larger city conversation about what our priorities are.
Let me try to get another call in here. And, Hank, you're on the air, but we only got a couple minutes left. So go ahead, brother.
How you doing today, Mr. Stein?
Good, man. How are you?
How you doing,
hi.
Ms. Mary Platt?
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Nice job you're doing with Charles Village. I love the things that you do in the neighborhood.
Oh, thank you.
I'm always saying you nice job that you do, young man.
This Thank you.
I would like somebody to explain to me, right?
Yes.
Why, if you're doing a fundraiser to donate money, do you have to have a nonprofit so that your money can be taxed? You're creating money to give away to somebody. Why do they want to tax money that you're giving away? Not money you're keeping. Money that you're having a fundraiser.
What are you talking about exactly? We only have a couple minutes left.
I wanted to do a fundraiser to donate money to Baltimore City Recreation Center. Right?
Oh, I see.
In the process of doing that, somebody told me, stop, you can't do it, because if you do it, you have to have a nonprofit church.
Okay.
So that the money can come through the nonprofit because it has to be taxed.
Okay, well, we have like 90
Henry,
seconds.
Henry, call my office tomorrow, 410-396-4811. 4811. Call me. I'll take it up tomorrow.
All right, well, I'm glad you said that, Mr. Stokes.
You got it.
Because, I mean, one of the things that, Hank is a really involved guy. He's a hack in town and a good citizen, so I'm glad he got through. So, folks, we got. I want to thank both of our city council members, Mayor Pat Clark and Carl Stokes, for joining us. It's been good to have you both here.
Thank you very much, Mike.
That's smart.
Mark Snyder Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily contents on arts, culture, food design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. I want you to stay tuned next. Urban Health Peters Up with Marilyn Harris Davis. Tonight's subject is Holistic Healthcare Part 2. You don't want to miss that. It'll be a great show. I see some of our guests now who I know, and it'll be a good show. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Cricket Aronson and Justin Levy. Our assistant producer is Cassandra Monsanto. Our interns are Elizabeth Walker, Tiffany Means, and Alex Pearson. We're engineered by Regis Tucker. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, join us on the web at steinershow.org. And for WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.